And greetings. Thanks to all who are joining us, and welcome to a very unique opportunity for a discussion with George Kavassalis and the folks from East Eddy Ranch, commonly known as the East Eddy Crew or the East Eddy Family. My name's Nate, and I'm joined today by my colleagues here at the East Eddy Ranch. We got Pam, we got Sun, we got Steph, we got the lovely Miss Jenna River Elf, and we have a longtime friend of the ranch, expert pilot and spiritual explorer of the sacred path, Mr. Brent Anderson.
Hello.
So we're pre-recording this roundtable discussion today with George, and it is the solstice, December 21st, here in Trout Lake at the ranch. And over in Australia, where George is, it is already the 22nd of December.
So Happy New Year, everybody.
Yep. Yeah.
Happy New Year.
Yep. We're going to be releasing this on As You Wish Radio, on the BBS Radio Network, on New Year's Night, and perhaps also as a YouTube video. And James today will not be joining us this evening, as he is getting some much-needed downtime, recharging, healing, and relaxation at an undisclosed location in Mexico. Now, earlier this year, the crew at the ranch discovered George's work, and we noticed that it had a very certain resonance or punch to it, if you will. And, you know, one thing led to another, and we ended up connecting to George. And earlier this summer, George and his lovely wife, Cynthia, after many synchronicities, came to visit the ranch, where George presented and shared some of his experiences and paradigm-challenging, if not just crushing, perspectives. So I was most impressed with, you know, the way that George handled himself and interacted with the crew, as well as the many guests that came from all over the world to participate. Despite George's thought-provoking and controversial perspectives, he has a very authentic way of coexisting amongst conflicting perspectives and honoring individuals' perspective, free will, and the right to their own path. So, you know, George, with this in mind, that there are so many different levels of engagement or individual paths that we might have, I thought it'd be an interesting topic for discussion to just start to discuss how we find harmony between our own understanding and allowing others to navigate their own paths and belief systems. You know, because people are not just being challenged by dealing with friends or family that are stuck in, you know, mainstream mass consumption consciousness, social consciousness. Some people are dealing with the challenges of relating to friends or teachers, people that they have shared a spiritual path with. You know, and so this challenge of the individual, you know, is something to consider. And it seems sometimes to be a very delicate balance to walk the path between speaking one's truth, being in one's own integrity, but at the same time not preaching or being in a state of judgment for others. Because of their different perspective or different belief system, or we might term it a worldview or even a galactic view, you know. So with paradigms crumbling and shifting all around us during these accelerated times of seemingly growing polarity gaps and diverging belief systems, can you share with us your perspective and advice on how we as individuals can, you know, navigate these sorts of challenges and work towards harmony?
Oh, wow. That is...
There's lots of room for exploration in that.
No, I so appreciate that question, because for me to get to the place where I am now, I've had to go through all these experiences, and today I continue to go through these experiences. I'm being challenged now, today. Today I'm going to ring up my family and wish them a happy new year. I'm going to ring up my friends and wish them a happy new year, because today's the beginning of the next cycle, of the annual cycle, of the way the sun revolves around the sun. So that will be in conflict, or maybe that's a bit of a hard term to use, but it won't be in sync, put it this way, with the majority of the view of the people on the planet, because they've been locked into a synthetic time construct, which was introduced by Pope Gregory XIII in 1582, and we call that the calendar. and it's the Gregorian calendrical system. So most people are functioning from that. Most people are going to celebrate New Year at the beginning of the 1st of January, whereas for me it begins today. We've got the 3 days of the sun sitting still in the horizon and then the return of the sun. So for us here, our real Christmas day is actually the 25th of June. So everybody down in the southern hemisphere, all of us folk down here in the southern hemisphere of the planet, we're also locked into your northern hemisphere's celebration of the winter solstice. And the whole thing has now been morphed into some commercial, you know, venture. So I'm constantly going through these challenges regularly. Those belief systems and the ideas and the constructs of life that we hold dear to ourselves are being challenged. I'm challenging people. I'm challenging their belief systems, their constructs, their ideas of what life is and what it should be. My beliefs are being challenged. They have been in the past greatly throughout my life and continue today. So I'm forever evolving and changing. We are in this ebb and flow. We're right in this fluid motion at the moment. It's kind of like anything that you thought was solid and tangible is just now becoming fluid. And so for anybody who wants to hold on to those old patterns and old ideas and stay rigid, well, you know, when the wind starts to blow and increase in ferocity and blow and blow and blow, or when that river starts to flow and get stronger and stronger and stronger, anything that's rigid will end up snapping. It's kind of like you if you are going to stay in this river of life and flow with the momentum as to where this reality is taking you, it is so important to really let go of our attachments to our ideologies, to our belief systems, and even that flows, you know, to the outside of us, because these are all internal constructs, and then, you know, whatever happens internally then manifests externally. So once we change internally, our external world changes. And what I've found is friends that I hold dear still today are no longer in my everyday circles, are no longer interacting with me to the degree that we used to, because, you know, some of them we just don't talk at all anymore because they're still wanting to stay in those old paradigms and old patterns. And my very vibration, just my beingness, just me, makes them uncomfortable. When we've got to be together and we've got to discuss, you know, oh, I like discussing the weather. The weather's a natural thing. It's good. But when they want to discuss who's sleeping with who and and what's happening in the political arena and things like that, I'm just not there. It's, for me, it's not an interest of mine in life. I don't enjoy engaging in those sort of conversations. I will if I have to, you know, being polite and respectful towards people, but I'm not really interested. And then what's really interesting that, okay, you can engage in that level of conversation because that's their world and their paradigm. And I do it with family and with friends to a degree. But the moment, and I mean the moment you start talking about our paradigm, they just can't handle it. So we can handle their paradigm, but they can't handle ours at all. And it's not us and them thing. It's just the vibrational realm and paradigm their awareness is still inside of, and how our awareness is expanding, going beyond that bubble paradigm of reality, of what many term the matrix. And we're just expanding our awareness constantly. I mean, we are growing. We are reawakening. We are in the process of becoming who and what we truly are. So I find that friends and family are being challenged, and it's challenging to be amongst those friends. And when I say friends, I also mean people that have been walking the spiritual path with us in recent times.
Yeah.
It's gotten to that level. Even those relationships have been greatly challenged, because what we're finding is I've got my ideas and, you know, my life's journey's taking me in a particular direction, and their journey's taking them in another direction. Whether we come back together further down the track will remain to be seen. But maybe this is part of, you know, for want of a better term, the separation of the wheat from the chaff. It's kind of like people are starting to go in their directions where their intuitive hearts are starting to guide them. And so we've got friends that are being caught up in certain spiritual ideologies which we don't feel comfortable with. So, yeah, can you hear me? So we are really being challenged greatly in that area. We've got friends that have really been indoctrinated into, you know, certain, I'm trying not to name them, you know, in certain spiritual ideologies which have certain idols or gurus, if you want to put it that way, that these people aspire to and give their power to. And you know, that's not our thing. We don't like that sort of thing. We know what that's all about. But for them, it's a beautiful thing. And to be in their presence is difficult because they're forever trying to impose it upon you whenever there's conversation. So these are the sort of challenges that are in our everyday lives.
Yeah. I feel you, George.
So... you know, it's great to know that we're all in this together. We're all going through it. Nobody's immune from it. Mm-hmm. Nobody's immune from it. And we're all here to go through this together. And we're all experiencing it in varying degrees because of the makeup of our individual journeys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, George, you know, it's not hard to notice after listening to you, especially listening to you live and seeing it happen in front of me with a large event that we did here at the ranch, that, you know, what you speak about tends to have a very deep and profound challenging nature to it, and it triggers many people. So, you know, with people being triggered by what you have to say, and we all... you know, perceive through our own unique lens and reality filter, there exists a lot of potential room for misinterpretation and misunderstanding. So, you know, with that in mind, what would you say to, you know, people that might be detractors of yours that think that you promote apathy because you are talking about ascension? You know, I heard some people say like, oh, well, he's talking about, you know, the end in 2012 or 2013, and that's just promoting people to, you know, not really take any responsibility or affect positive change in their world, or to, you know, really plan on continuing to live their lives. What do you say to people that might say that sort of thing?
Oh, well, I'd just say that they haven't listened to the whole message, that they've just reacted to one part of the message. So it shows where people are at. That's how I view it. Because when I listen to somebody else and I react, what I'm actually doing is realizing that I've just activated a program inside of me. Why am I reacting? Why am I feeling that way? Mm-hmm. So when people get that reaction to the information I'm sharing, the same thing's going on. And it just shows them where they're at. And if I, because I'm in the process of writing a book, if I could just read the preface out, because it'll pretty much answer what... you know, it helps people understand where I'm coming from. And it's only three paragraphs. Is that okay if I do that?
Yeah, awesome. Let's hear it, George.
Okay, I'll give you a sneak peek of the book.
Nice.
So the book begins this way in the preface. First, I must ask you, is it okay with you that an ordinary man can have a life of extraordinary experiences that enable him to once again have the understanding of life? And basically... access to the answers of the four primordial questions. Who are we? Where do we come from? What are we doing here? And where are we headed? I would like to think and feel that that is okay with you, but if it is not, then you'll need to defend your belief system, and your ego, which is already feeling threatened, will greatly taint and diminish your ability to come to terms with and comprehend the magnitude of knowledge and wisdom that is being shared with you here in this moment and in the pages that follow. Did that feel challenging? For many, the answer will most likely be yes. I assure you I'm not coming from a place of arrogance, but rather a place of understanding. I understand what it feels like to have what we hold dear as our perception and beliefs of what life is and what life should be challenged in a way that makes us feel uncomfortable. This has been happening to me throughout my life and continues today. What I have come to know is that the moment will soon come when we will have the opportunity to once again consciously be reconnected with the greater aspects of self and therefore the universe and beyond. If until that moment we are to only always be in our comfort zone, remaining metaphorically wrapped up in cotton wool, too fearful to venture and explore life beyond our current mental and intellectual paradigms, and to never feel challenged in any way, then we will forever remain stagnant in our level of awareness with little or no growth in wisdom. That could very well result in a missed opportunity for that reconnection. The information that I will be sharing with you here will challenge mindsets, mental constructs, and also challenge belief systems. In fact, for many, it will challenge them greatly, more so than others. Everyone will be challenged in one way or another. You will see that I do not favour one group over another, as I am here to expose everything on all levels. As one reads on and the level of discomfort rises it internally, then please consider that this may well be an indicator that what is being exposed here is one having unknowingly been assimilated into a mental or intellectual construct and or belief system procured from our societal programming. Please note that this book is not for the faint-hearted. I'm not here to fluff things up by wrapping the information in sophisticated, seductive literature so it gives you the warm and fuzzies. Nor am I here to entertain your mind. In fact, I'm here to confront your mind. This is about informing you in the clearest, most raw and simplistic way I can. It's time to just tell it how it is. And that's how I feel. That's how I truly feel. The time has come for all the layers and all the, you know, sophisticated, because there's people out there presenting information in such a sophisticated way, like their intellectual steptoe is genius. I mean, the intellectual muscle is very impressive, the way they go about presenting and the language that they use. And I feel it's time, you know, that's why I say to people, just call me Shrek. I'm not going to pretty everything up and try and sell it to you. I'm just the guy, that the ogre that's come here just to tell you how it is, how it truly is. And then it's up to you to make up your mind what you want to do with it after that.
Yeah, for sure. And, yeah, people need to realize that. I think that that was kind of one of the main things I got out of, you know, your presentation, George, is while we all may see things differently, and I may not agree with you on everything that you say, you encourage that. You encourage people to go check it out and figure it out for themselves. And, you know, I think it's a really important role that you're playing by challenging us to look at what we think we know. Every once in a while, or even very often, that's a very excellent exercise for us to be able to do.
Question everything. Question where you're at. I question where I'm at.
Yeah, totally.
And, you know, when you start getting comfortable and complacent, you're getting back into those little comfort zones. And right now, right at the end of the cycle, it's more important than ever to embrace change and to actually embrace the challenge of change.
Yeah.
And when you can do that, it's not such an arduous ordeal. It actually becomes exciting. It's like anyone who's ever done any form of physical fitness or, you know, who does running or canoeing or whatever, hiking, when you set your goal and you climb that mountain, it's a really good feeling. And then, okay, I've climbed this one, now I'm going to climb the even bigger one. Mm-hmm. And it's just this feeling, this you embrace the challenge. It's like, oh, no, now I've got to climb that mountain. It's a completely different attitude. It's like, bring it on. So for me, it's like, show me, challenge me, show me what life is about. I want to be challenged. I'm digging, I'm asking, and I'm questioning. You know, it's so important to question everything. And anybody who's working with any type of being, you know, because you know my perspective on the so-called ascended masters in the New Age movement, you know, question them, like interrogate them. And I don't mean question them lightly. Don't ask one little soft little question and go, okay, so that's the answer. You know, no, it's like command them, show me your true form. I command you to show me your true form. And when people do that, they're in for a rude shock. And don't ask them once, do it over and over again. Show me your true form. And what they see will shock them greatly, because what's behind those energies is not what people think. Because there's a lot of deception being played on humanity at this point in time. And we have to be real. We can't just be complacent and be naive and gullible anymore. The time has come for us to honor our sovereignty, to honor our spirit. Mm-hmm. You know, be true to yourself, because if you keep giving your power away to all these other beings, you're selling yourself. You're selling yourself short.
Nice. So, George, could you maybe elaborate on this a little bit? You're not saying that interacting with any being, with beings by and large, is something negative. You're not saying that we should just go out and try and interact with anybody that you want to, necessarily. You're just saying that a little bit more discernment is in order?
Well, I'll take it further than just a little bit more discernment. I would actually say, let's say, for example, someone's meditating, they're bringing in a light from another being in that meditation, and then they do it, you know, continuously. Then what's happening is you've got two things going on, and these are two main factors in these whole equations. These are two biggest variables, is dependency and ritual. They're the two big ones. So if you are having a relationship with another being, and there is something that is being done on a regular basis, and that what is being done is actually a process of you externalizing. So you're using energies from outside of you to do things for you constantly on a regular basis. Well, that's ritual, and that's dependency. So they're the two key areas to look for in any relationship. In any relationship. I mean, that's what governments are trying to do. They're trying to make it like you can't live without them, and they have to supply everything for you. Now they're not going to allow you to grow even your own veggies in your own vegetable patch at home, because for some reason, insane, deluded reason, they're going to try and make it as though it's a bad thing to do, because you have to then go to the supermarkets and buy the genetically modified food that they want to give you. So again, it's all about creating dependency and humanity giving its power away to a system. So all I'm trying to say is, if you take what we have here on Earth, and a great man once said, as above, so below, and you've got to realize that these same systems exist in the cosmic arena, and they're very sophisticated, and they're very clever. They've been around for eons. We're talking about eons and eras and epochs of evolution in our universe. And it's important that we're not naive and gullible, and that we actually really question, really look, because right now we're right at the crossroads. Humanity's right at the crossroads, because there's these beings that want to harvest their human herd, and they're going to use every trick in the book, everything that they have ever known, that they have ever manifested themselves in the way of a system or a manipulative structure, a manipulative construct. That is what's being thrown at the human race at the moment, because we're being tested to see who's got it and who hasn't got it. And if you get lured into one of these paradigms, then you're not ready. You're not ready to ascend. It's that simple. Hmm. Wow. It is confronting, and it is, you know, but we need someone. Like, I've got a friend every now and then will grab me by the, you know, metaphorically does this, grabs me by the scruff of the neck and slaps me around a bit, you know? So that's pretty much what I'm doing with you guys, a bit of tough love, because it needs to happen. There's just so much la-di-da complacency going on in our world at the moment, and we've got to strip away all the facades and bring it back to reality and just see things for what they are, because whenever we interact with these beings, any being of the true light will actually encourage you to do that. When you start hammering them, when you start giving them a hard time, okay, you're going to test that relationship. You're going to see exactly what you're dealing with. And the beings of the true light would honor you for that, respect you more for it. It is the beings that have got something to hide that won't like that, that will feel uncomfortable, and you will feel that energetic backlash. You will feel the discomfort, and it will get to the point where things are not going to go too well in that relationship.
You personally experienced that on a number of occasions then, huh?
I have. I had Lord Sananda turn up in my bedroom, showering me with love and light. And I just got out of my bed, and my heart just opened up. And it just instantly, the energy that I have in here, in my core of my being, that energy and that frequency of love, unconditional love, is not the same that this being was emanating or actually imposing upon me, because that's what he was doing. And because normally that sort of energy, when a being like Lord Sananda, you can imagine a New Age meditation group, and, you know, they meditate to all the angels and ascended masters, then Lord Sananda turns up and he showers them with all this light and love. What do you think is going to happen? You know, people are just going to totally bliss out. Some will fall to their knees and cry, and it's going to be an amazing scene, and they're going to think the cosmic Christ has visited them, you know. But the guy's an imposter. So he's got to go around, he's got to impose that energy on people, he's got to sell what he is. And I said, go away, you're an imposter, you have no power over me. I know who and what you are, and leave. And so he just left. And I was really glad I was able to do that, because a lot of other people won't behave that way.
So I think Brent had a question that might be kind of in line with where the discussion's at.
I think he answered it already, George. I missed your presentation here at ESETI, but I did buy your DVD set.
And thoroughly, hey, Brent.
Thoroughly enjoyed that. And one of the questions I wanted to get a little more of your input on was your experience with the Galactic Federation of Light. Gets a lot of press these days, and there's a lot of hype out there. And I wanted to just hear more from you about that, because you had direct experience. And go ahead.
Yeah, I did. I was taken on board their ships for a long time. They also had a lot of implants from them, and also interacted with them down here on these levels. So what I came to realize was that they were assimilating me into their structure. And when I say structure, I mean a cosmic paradigm. And what we have in this galaxy's galactic paradigm. So the Galactic Federation of Light is exactly that. It is an empire, but the way this empire is presented is really clever, because they have their own frequency of light. This paradigm has its own light frequency, light energy. And so what it does is it assimilates people into that vibration, into that frequency. And within that frequency, they have, at the upper reaches of it, they have spiritual hierarchy. So they have what we call ascended masters, angelic beings, and what have you. Now, I'm not saying all angels are like this. People just need to realize that there are, you know, what is an angel? It's a generic term anyway, from a being that comes from the much higher realms and is a being of light. So again, it depends on your definition of what an angel is. But what I'm trying to bring about to people's awarenesses is that there's a lot of ET groups that have been assimilated into these structures, and they go around and they present themselves as though it's a wonderful thing. Now, the beings in that structure truly believe that it's a wonderful thing, you know, but they themselves don't realize, just like a Jehovah's Witness will come and knock on your door. They truly believe they're working for God and they're doing the right thing. Well, it's the same principle. The principle's the same. You know, you've got ET races that have been assimilated into this structure, indoctrinated into this infrastructure, and they're going around, you know, basically, I will go as far as imposing, because they do it in a very sophisticated way, in a way that you don't think it's imposing. Imposing their cultural philosophies, their spiritual philosophies and teachings onto planetary civilizations. Now, sure, you can say it's a peaceful organization, but you could say the same thing about the United Nations, can't you? Mm-hmm. And pretty much if you look, as above, so below. So the United Nations is very similar to the Galactic Federation, if you want to use an earthly analogy. Right. And so when you have... I'll give you an example of what they're doing to us here on Earth. We are physically a very young race, okay? And they're coming to us and they're saying, oh, good little children, you know, good little children, come with us. We will guide you, we will mentor you, and we will welcome you into our galactic community. That's what they're saying to us. Now, I don't know if they just basically don't know who we are, really, or they're either ignorant of the truth, or they are totally deceiving. Because the reality is, while we are a very young race physically, who the beings that are in this humanoid vessel, right, are the oldest races in the universe. We are the oldest beings in the youngest physical container because of what's being created here on Earth. What is Earth about? What is the human race about? So we are actually the oldest and the wisest. We're the way showers. So if they don't know this, then their paradigm is keeping them in ignorance of reality, of truth. They are having a very limited perception and understanding of life. So they're kept in ignorance on a cosmic level. Sure, when they turn up with their spacecraft and their technologies and all that, for us it's like, wow, you know, it's really bedazzling, you know. But the reality is that's still nothing compared to many other areas of the universe, and nothing compared to doing everything organically through your own consciousness where there's no need for technology whatsoever. So these are the sort of things to look out for. And it's kind of like them coming to us and saying, you know, we're going to welcome you into the galactic community is no different to, let's say, and because we've been living under the tyranny of like a planetary dictatorship, right? So I'm trying to give you an analogy here. It's like an island on our world who, or a country like Zimbabwe who's lived under the dictatorship of a tyrannous dictator, you know? And then all of a sudden, that dictator and that infrastructure has been removed and the people feel like they're free. So the Galactic Federation is coming here and they're trying to, going through the process of removing the dictatorship on our planet. Now, what that will happen next is the people will have representatives of the people will then get taken to the United Nations and they will be welcomed there. There'll be a beautiful ceremony and those people will be standing there in the United Nations truly believing what they're doing for their country is the right thing, that it's a good thing. And they are welcomed into the international community, into the United Nations. Now, we know what the United Nations is about. So if you take that exact same thing and you apply it on a cosmic level, the Galactic Federation of Light wants to welcome you into that community. But do you really know what the Galactic Federation of Light's all about?
Well, see, it's because a higher level of captivity, I think.
It is. It is exactly that. It is a federation.
Yeah.
Okay?
It sounds too good to be true because it is too good to be true. I mean, they make it sound like a free lunch and that people don't have to do inner work and don't have to work on themselves in order to raise their level of awareness and raise their level of consciousness. And I just got to the point where I just rejected the whole thing. I tuned into their message for a while, and I'm going, wait a minute. They're telling me if I haven't raised my level of awareness enough to wholly participate in this experience, that all I have to do is get in one of their machines and they're going to fix my DNA. I don't think I'm going to get into anybody's machine. I'm going to do it the old-fashioned way. And I meditate and do Qigong, and I'm going to get as far as I get. And I'm comfortable with that. There are many other things they say like that. You don't have to produce for yourself. We're going to give you a replicator. You don't have to worry about Earth changes. We're going to whisk you into inner Earth, and the Agarthans are going to take care of you while the storm blows overhead. And when it's safe to come out, we'll bring you out.
Exactly. You know, it's like I don't want to go into someone else's piece of technology and have someone else controlling that piece of technology, therefore controlling my ascension process. What's that all about?
A glossy...
I don't know why people don't see that. They readily admit their process. I mean, it's just so obvious. But people are in a trance. They really are in such a trance. There's so many programs on the planet, and that's why sometimes my delivery is so raw and so firm, and because I'm trying to break through all these layers and all these energetic layers and levels of energetic patterns. Because if you look at it like a recipe book, because if you look on our planet, we've got all these different mindsets. So basically, it's like a cookbook, and they've got a recipe for every mindset. So they're not leaving any mindset unchallenged. They want to capture and captivate every single mindset possible. So they have a program for every mindset. They've worked long and hard at this. And the New Age with the angels and the Ascended Masters their version of spirituality, and the beings that are behind that version of spirituality is not what you think. In fact, I'm going to go as far as telling you now that in recent weeks we challenged these beings because we had personal interactions with them, okay? And we challenged them, and we challenged them, we commanded them to reveal their true identity. And when they did, there was a winged serpent behind there, and we had to deal with that winged serpent, okay? So understand that these, for a long time, I have been saying that do not underestimate the ability of the forces of limitation to pose as angels of light.
So it's a brighter, it's a brighter form, a brighter form of darkness, and they want to feed off your energy by taking your sovereignty. Is that another way?
Exactly. Yeah. And it's, you know, and even the people are asking about the law of one. Well, in the law of one, they talk about the infinite one. Well, you can't have that. That's a contradiction right there. Well, their reference to eternal intellect is the infinite one. Well, you can't. You can't have one and the word infinite together. It's a contradiction. The moment you have the word one, it encapsulates something. Therefore, it's limitations instantly. Life is not like that. Life is eternal. We are eternal. We are infinite. We always have been. We always will be. There is no beginning. There is no end to us. Okay? We've never been born or spawned out of some God entity or some, you know, one being. It's not like that. Life is not like that. If anyone understands what the words infinite and eternal mean, then all these other concepts become transparent. They're all programs, and they are very clever and very sophisticated, and they've been evolving over eons and epochs and eras of time in many galactic systems, in many planetary systems, and they become very sophisticated, and we are being challenged with the best. We asked for it. On a high level, we wanted this because we wanted to be tested, this human form, this godly being, and that's what it's about. To be tested right to the nth degree to see who's got it and who hasn't got it. Because if you are to become a creator of light, which is, you know, the construct of this universe, which is what we're learning, then you need to be tested with everything it has to offer. And with its very nature of light being a dualistic energetic expression, then you need to be tested with everything. Otherwise, if you think you're going to start creating your own universe via the construct of light and energies inside of that, inside of your own creation, your beingness, can start getting the better of you, have the ability to, trick you and lure you in and manipulate your awareness, then your universe is going to be in trouble. And that's not allowed to happen. So really, this is about testing everybody to the nth degree.
Indeed it is.
So, George, maybe we could back up. You were mentioning that you had this run-in recently, and you were talking about winged serpents. Now, we got Mr. Sun over here, and he's got a very interesting perspective on serpents and the symbology behind that. And, you know, I mean, we look at that. That's a symbol that a lot of people have negative connotations for. Some people connect it to reptilian races in general. But maybe that's not necessarily the full picture if we just were to just generically look at it like that.
I'm glad you brought that up.
I just want to foster a discussion around that maybe a little bit.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. It's a very important topic to raise because, you know, I'm not racist, and it's important that we're not racist. And there's a lot of negative propaganda going around. Son.
Hey.
Hey, brother. It's a lot of negative propaganda going around to do with the reptilian and draconian forces. And I mean, people need to understand who these beings are. And people, first of all, anybody who's ventured and explored a lot in this universe like we have, then you know that there's an aspect of you that is draconian or has been. There's an aspect of you that has been or is still a winged serpent, as you know, a reptilian. We've done it all, we've been it all. So, you know, it's about being sensible and not being racist.
Yeah, there just seems to be a lot of general association that reptilians are negative, they're evil, they're bad. But I do remember you mentioned in your talk that when Mother Earth, the consciousness that was the planet Earth, decided to embody a planet to foster human beings, she connected with the Blue Dragon clans, you said.
And yeah, there was much, much deliberation that took place with all the serpent races because it was basically the serpent energy that became pretty much had mastered most of the lower domains of the universe. The knowledge that those races contained. And you could say, okay, mastered in what form? Sure, there was, you know, very nasty empires that went around brutalizing and marauding life, sure. But there's also some very wise reptilian and draconian races and dragon clans and what have you. It's not all just awful wickedness and doom and gloom. I mean, let's not be racist here, like I said. So Mother, the Divine Feminine, prior to her manifesting, she needed the best knowledge. And so, of course, she has that knowledge on a much higher level, but to come down to this level and to start manifesting herself as this planet, you know, the planet, the process here, it's, you know, she wasn't going to be above anybody else. She was going to be like every other planetary being and go through the same processes. So the same energetic patterns were required. And the serpent races were consulted, and there was the energy that she decided to embrace, which best embodied the Lady Gaia personality, is the Blue Dragon Clan.
The serpents just sound like DNA spirals and vortexes, and also behind all of the root races here, all of the mythology are that the kings all connect with the dragon clans, that they're descendants of the dragons, and from the Western world to the South America, Africa, I know Asians, the Asian kings claim their right to rule because they're descendants of the dragons, and the dragons are very different. Eastern dragons and Western dragons are very different, and it seems like from what I understand, the Eastern dragons are rude, ruse water, and the Western dragons seem to be winged ones with that breathe fire. And I just wanted to kind of talk about that so people don't have a general stereotype that all reptilians are bad and then have a blind spot in their awareness of that.
Yeah, everybody, we've even got the reptilian part of our brain. We've even got Kundalini. I mean, Kundalini is a serpent energy anyway. So if people don't understand that, they just don't understand themselves. They don't understand their bodies, their makeup, their construct. They don't understand their journey in the universe, and they're just being judgmental and self-righteous. So we need to look at this from a much grander perspective. Yeah.
Great.
And the ones that come from the water and the ones that come from, you know, the winged ones, because there's some decent winged ones too, but unfortunately there's some unsavory cousins in the serpent, paradigm. And they're the ones that have come here recently in the last 6,000 years and done a lot of damage. So I guess that's why there's a lot of bad press, because those guys are quite nasty. They're not very nice. And unfortunately, but you know, they're in the process of being removed.
Nice. I wanted to talk about, I remember when you said to enslave a race, what they did with humanity was that they enslaved the feminine or something to that degree, right?
That's right.
And in the Bible, there's a quote of a time period when the angels came onto the daughters of men. And could you talk about the effect of that, and how was it before then, and what did that entail?
Well, before, a lot of people lived in harmony with the consciousness of the planet. I mean, even prior to incarnating, the first thing you got to do is, you know, your soul gets attracted here because of the vibration of the place. So an aspect of yourself comes here and you know, enters through the core of the galaxy. Let's say you're already in the galaxy and you're just being attracted to this solar system and this planet. You still got to merge with the energies of the paradigm of this solar system. And after that, you've got to merge with the planet that you're going to incarnate on. It's, you know, you're actually having a deep, deep and intimate relationship with the consciousness of the planet you're incarnating onto and the star body that you're going inside of. And really, you're going in the planetary body too, because we're already immersed in the ethereal chambers, the magnetic chamber, the magnetic chamber body, the atmospheric body. You know, we're already inside Mother Earth pretty much, you know. And so our essence goes into the core of the sun and merges and becomes one. Then from there, we project an aspect to the core of the Earth, and we merge and become one. And then from there, we project a stepping down vibrational aspect again to our incarnational construct. So each one of us has an aspect of ourselves in the core and the heart of the Earth Mother, and in the core and the heart of the Father Son. So I just wanted to explain that because, you know, we needed to really, the relationship that we have with this planet is so deep, so vastly deep. And it's no ordinary planet. It's the microcosm of the macrocosm. So all life is represented here. You know, it's I may have just diverted from your question. If you want to, it was before the daughters. Okay, it just came back to me. So that relationship was really deep with the divine feminine, and it was very respectful, and everybody understood. I mean, even in the old days, when the planetary system devolved and started going into us needing to eat to live. We didn't used to go around hunting and killing animals. We would just connect with the natural kingdom and ask. And then an animal will come out of the woods and kneel before you. And then you would, take its life and hold the heart up and honor the spirit of the animal, forgiving of itself, so that you may continue to, you can eat and continue to live abundantly in this reality. You know what I mean? Wow. That was the process. That's what you see on cave paintings of, in ancient times, of people holding up the hearts of the animal. It's not, academia will say that's that's a sacrifice to honor their gods. What a load of crap. It was the honoring of the animal's spirit, because they used to just come and just give themselves so that the people could eat. It's amazing the connection that we had with, and I say we because I had a life in those times, we had in, with our natural environment around us. It was very harmonious. And then these energies started coming in and manipulating the feminine energy, and everything started to change because it was time for this reality to descend further into compression.
And these angels that's talked about in the Bible, were they just from one race, or were they just a whole...
A slew of different cast of characters.
Right.
there were ones that were coming, different ones that were coming, but primarily the ones that are behind the religious structures are all one group.
This is like the Jehovahian group, basically, you're talking about?
Yeah, they're the ones you got to look out for, because they're the ones that are posing as light. They're the ones that have created the religious structures, and they're the ones that see themselves as gods that are to be worshipped.
So the ones in the Bible that refer to them as angels, these are the group that you're referring to. And so they laid with the daughters of men, and supposedly they created half-breeds, which were probably considered demigods or gods themselves.
Yeah, because what they did is they went around marauding all the genetics, and because there's a lot of power through genetics. To get power through technology, you can only go so far with it. To get power through, to empower oneself through consuming substances, you can only get so far with that. Mm-hmm. But to be able to do it through the manipulation of life force, well, that's genetics. And so they went around marauding all the genetics and got the best, abilities from whatever race, and the most beautiful races, what they saw as beautiful, and created the perfect, according to them, the perfect vessel. So then they were able to put themselves inside those vessels. And the Orion Nordics are the ones that embody that. They're very angelic looking. They're very, they come across as very spiritually advanced beings. There's other races too. There's a group of Lyrians that are like that as well. You've got to be careful of these groups. They pose and present themselves as though they're very angelic looking. And they were the ones that have taken a lot of the humanoid genetics. And so they're the ones that came and bred with the daughters of men.
Would they have been called the Elohim, George? Is that Because I think of the Elohim were the ones that interbreeded with human women and produced the offspring of the Nephilim. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. And there was, and they're not just the blonde-haired ones. There's also some other vessels which have different attributes as well. Because what happened was sometimes there was other races within their empire that they wanted their people represented here as well. So they would then create a perfect genetic container and have one of their lords of their empire occupy that vessel, then come to Earth and blend their genetics, because they knew, they started to realize what was going on here. Why was there one planetary system that had all life in the universe represented here? The amount of energy, the amount of biodiversity doesn't exist anywhere else like it does here on Earth. And our genetics, here you had babies being born that can access more life force than any of these beings who have lived for over millions and millions and millions of years and have marauded the cosmos and tried to become as powerful as they possibly could. And here you had babies being born on this planet that had more power than they had. And that freaked them out. That was like, for them, it was, this is not going to happen. How?
Right.
How is that possible? You know, they were insanely jealous of this place and said, we have to control this. And they started moving in on the place. And they came up with all sorts of programs to infiltrate this reality.
So they came in, posed as beings of light and angels, and basically just pulled a charade over the whole planet, Is this related, the story of Isis, Osiris, and Set, is this related to that same concept of how Set came and cut up Osiris's body, spread him throughout the underworld, and Isis had to search for his body part? Is that a same, same concept?
There's more. That story has interpretations on many levels. That's a very complex story. Just like you can look at stories in the Bible and they're very complex, like the Son of God story. I'll get into that. I have a really good understanding of that. Because you're the Son of God, I'm the Son of God. Pamela's the Son of God. We're all the Son of God. And, you know, the universe is birthing a race of universal creators, if you know what I mean. So that's what it means to be a child of God. And the reason that terminology was used, okay, I'm into it now, I'll just go through with it, but I'll get back to what you were saying. This is really important to understand this interpretation. To be a child of God doesn't mean you are subservient, okay? The church or the priestly castes are totally misusing what Jesus said all that time ago. So when he said that I am the Son of God and you too are the Son of God, he meant that in the way that we've entered this universe, we are going through the process of learning the construct of light, and we are then to birth. I'll give you an example. What he really meant was, as far as I'm concerned, okay, this is my humble opinion and what he really meant, was as you exist before, prior to entering your mother's womb, and you entered into your mother, so you went through a gestation period inside your mother's womb, and then you are birthed, and so you can be as your mother. So you take on the genetic line of your mother and your father. Do you know what I mean? So you chose that incarnational lineage, which was good for you. It's the same. You chose the entry and journey into this universe. You wanted to become a being of light. So you want to become a creator of light. So you entered this universe. Your journey in this universe is the gestation period. Now, the feminine aspect of this universe is birthing the universal creators. Do you get the analogy there? It's the same thing. He was trying to explain that to people, that we are children of God, for want of a better term, the universal creator, and we are here to become as the universal creator, just like you entered your mother's womb, you could be made as your mum. Know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. And so the Osiris story is what is that about?
Yeah, well, the Osiris story is about the male energy fragmenting itself, just as we all journeyed down through the universe, we fragmented ourselves down through all the levels into many realities and domains. The male energy of the universe had to do the same, simply because it's not self-righteous and doesn't sit there just pointing the finger. The Creator doesn't function that way. Mm-hmm. The Creator gets down with the people. And so it came down, it fragmented itself. So it allowed itself to become vulnerable to the forces of limitation within its own creation on that level with the people. So it was fragmented by what we would call the forces of limitation. Mm-hmm. And different aspects, like male consciousness, was expressed in many different areas. And that is the breaking up of the male energy into all these different areas. So it's the fragmenting of the male energy. I'm giving you like the larger story of it, because there's lower interpretations of that as well. Mm-hmm. And so now the phallus was right at the end, and the phallus is actually the sun, our sun out there, which is Horus. Hmm. Okay, so it's a big story. Hang on, just let me make sure I explain this properly. Because the male energy manifested itself as Orion, which is really Osiris as well. And the female energy manifested herself as Isis, which is Sirius, the Sirius star system, because it's a stepping down of energy. So first they manifested themselves as galaxies. So you got the Milky Way and Andromeda. Then the Andromedan galaxy inserted a sperm, okay, the cosmic sperm, into the Milky Way galaxy, which and manifested itself as Orion. And that was the symbology there. And so they went from galaxies to star systems within this galaxy, because this galaxy is a galactic womb. And then they stepped their energy down, because Osiris, Orion, and Sirius, Isis, came together and had a child, which is Horus, the sun. Mm-hmm. And it's a stepping down of energy. So while the male energy fragmented and you had all these archetypal energies, and I'll give you an example of an archetype, you've got the male warrior energy. Now, the star system that embodies that energy is Alpha Draconis. The Draconian forces are the most adept warrior race pretty much in existence, right? They have mastered being a warrior. Mm-hmm. And if any male wants to tap into being a warrior in this life, then start tapping into Draconian energy, because they are... It's like on this planet too. Who are some of the most incredible warriors on this planet? And if you look at the Māori race in New Zealand, they're the only race that couldn't be defeated by the Europeans. The Europeans had to sign a peace treaty with them. So, you know, what I'm trying to explain is you've got some really races that really mastered the art of being a warrior. Mm-hmm. And that's an archetype. Now, Orion embodied the hunter, which is the provider and the protector. That's the father archetypal energy. And it also got fragmented into many others. So the sun ended up being the phallus, really, the golden phallus, which is the sun. And that was the one that was to impregnate the planetary womb, which is the Earth, which was to see the birthing of the new life. Because Isis took the golden phallus, right? Mm-hmm. So she manifested herself as the Earth. So at least the phallus was kept sacred. It's all very symbolic and very metaphorical.
Hmm. First heard about your materials over YouTube, and that was the distortions of the masculine and feminine I really resonated with, and it's just been showing up over and over in my life, and new developments, new pieces to the puzzle, so that's great getting a little more
Well, we all have these archetypes within us, you know. When you start to realize that, we all have these archetypes in us, these archetypal personalities. And, you know, there's parts of us that are the nurturer, the provider, the protector, the warrior. There's, you know, there's a saboteur in all of us. We've all got these archetypes. And it's, you know, it's a really great way of addressing your own personal issues through that avenue.
Right. The 12 archetypes all expressed in one, but predominant and all that stuff. Sometimes we're just predominant with a certain archetype. So you mentioned about Draconis and talking about possible pole shifting. Right now, the Earth is, its rotation is aligned with the pole star. Is there any significance to that? And once the Earth shifts, where do you see that aligning to? What's the significance of the pole star?
Yeah, the Polestar. Well, they call it the Polestar because it seems to, the wobble seems to rotate around this Polestar.
Right.
So it kind of is an energy that, seems to be a stabilizing energy for the wobble. And it's quite a relationship that our Earth Mother is having with that star. Excuse me, that's something I haven't felt much into, so I haven't got much more to share about that. So I'm going to feel into that. That's a really good one.
Yeah, that. George, you were kind of breaking up there. Could you just repeat that, what you said? I think you're just saying you're going to write that down for further research. Is that what you said?
Yeah, I'm going to, and not so much research as in reading books, but I'm going to feel into the relationship with our Earth Mother and the Polestar. So that's, yeah, because I felt when someone speaks to me, I'm feeling energy. And what Sun just did to me just then made a really good suggestion to my beingness, saying, George, you might want to go in this direction. So thank you. I appreciate that. I'm always learning. Always, yeah, that's great. Cool. So that's an area I need to look into, yeah.
Yeah, that is interesting in that we revolve around the pulsar, and the pulsar is a constant up in the sky. And if there is a pole shift and a little, and the wobble is happening, magnetic north seems to be moving, and I'm just curious what that would be. So that's interesting.
Yeah, well, can I just take a moment, too, to say that in recent times I was saying that a very real possibility was going to be that the Earth is going to straighten up, and then on 2013 the planetary light body gets activated, and in that moment the crust will collapse inward. So for me, that when I tuned into that, it was a very real possibility. It's probably the most extreme ways of looking at this process. And for me, what it really did is it really helped with my level of attachment to this reality. And when I really personally considered that as a very real possibility and reality, which it was in the timeline, I want to say now that that may not be the case. So maybe there's been a shift and a change, and I don't want to remain hard-headed or narrow-mindedness or closed-minded. I'm actually a person that's evolving and growing constantly all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So when I shared that information, I still can't rule that out, to be honest with you. I still can't rule it out. But what I want to say is I want to be open and honest and say that that might not be a reality in this timeline at the moment, because things are fluctuating and fluid and moving all the time. So what I want people to do is not take that for gospel. I don't want people to take anything I say for gospel, of course. I want people to do their own homework and their own research. So I just want to make that point clear that that might not be the case.
Right, it's all possible outcomes, and who knows what's going to happen. Humans are the most unpredictable beings on the universe, it seems.
Well, you know, the thing that I still can't let go of, and I've tried, honestly, because I'm always questioning my belief systems or my understanding of the way things are going, is that this whole reality has to change. You know, whenever you look out there in nature, everything's killing everything. And that vibration is not a match for the higher frequencies. So one way or another, that has to be transmuted and metamorphosized. Now, the actual time frame that occurs, and I know it's not going to be a long time frame. That I know for sure, but it might not be within the next 12 months, is all I'm saying. But what I'm saying is it could be a little bit longer. But for me, that's a given. That is an absolute given. That has to change. It has to transmute and metamorphosize. Everything's killing everything. It's not, you know, nature has her beauty, but when you look beneath that facade of that beauty, it is death and destruction, barbarianism, and it's really sad. There's a lot of pain and suffering. And Mother Earth on her body has got that constantly. Not just us, the human race, but every bug, every worm, every bird, every insect, every plant, everything is consuming life, other life forms, in order to live.
Mm-hmm.
So the very vibration of that occurring is not a frequency match. So that has to change. So maybe the way I explained it, the way I thought it might play out, might not be exactly how it plays out. But it still needs to happen regardless, because it's just not a frequency match. That's what I wanted to explain. Maybe the mechanical processes that I shared earlier is not going to happen that way, but it still has to happen. And the other given is, or an affirmative for me, is the cycle ending on the March equinox. That's when it ends. I can't let go of that either. I've tried, but it just, my heart's right in there with that, and it finishes on the March equinox.
George, with that being said, and the cycle, you're still feeling really strong that the cycle ends on that date. Do you feel that it's necessarily synonymous with saying that this, that the cycle ends, but does that necessarily mean that that everyone will be aware of that life will be completely different, and that everyone would be living in a different, you know, frequency spectrum come that date?
I'm in a totally different frequency than I was 6 months ago.
Sure, right.
And I'm getting to the point now where I actually need less food, to be honest. Cynthia and I are going through a shift we have in the last 3 months, and we're finding that we're needing less food. And the types of food that our body requires is changing as well.
We've been noticing a little of that as well.
Yeah, you too. it's great to hear. And so we've got to start listening to what our body's requirements, and not just our physical bodies, but our energetic bodies, are saying to us, we don't like the vibration of that. So rather you don't have that. Because the moment you consume it, you're going to go, ugh. It doesn't feel too good. And it's not so much a physical sensation, but an energetic sensation. And the Earth is changing rapidly. And I will say around 2013 March, I will say that actually from this March till the next March, I think is going to be a very, very interesting time. Because it'll be one annual solar cycle from to the beginning of the to the end of the cycle, and so I'm looking at things really getting going from March onwards. Sometime in that 12-month period, it's going to be really exciting.
Hey George, Brent again. I have a question for you about the shift, and as we shift and raise our vibrations, we shift to unity consciousness at some point. Is that correct? And the Earth will also shift to unity consciousness. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
We already have unity consciousness. Okay. What we're doing is we're reintegrating with it. I suppose we just said the same thing. You're just looking at it from within the arena here.
A question I had was as the Earth shifts, I've come across some information, and I wonder if you what your feeling is about this, that the magnetic field of the Earth will shift from a bipolar field to a monopolar field, where one pole shifts to the center of the Earth and the other pole is like a spherical shape around it. What can you say about that?
My understanding is that eventually the planet has to straighten up on her axis. And she needs to, because inside the Earth, and I'm answering that question, what's inside the Earth and the crust that's around what's inside the Earth, okay? So you got something that's inside, and then you've got a crust that's around it.
Right.
What is inside the Earth is a female version of our sun, right? That's what's inside the Earth. Now that, eventually, the eggshell, okay, has to crack and allow the birthing of this sun. And how that's going to happen, I put one suggestion forward. I still feel it's a possibility. I just don't want to make it, you know, that's it. You know, I want to be flexible. I want to be fluid, and I have to flow with the changes. Mm-hmm. So for me, that still needs to happen. Now, how the process is going to take place, over what period of time, it's not going to be over decades.
Right.
That's for sure. Okay? Simply because I know I'm a part of a new reality in the future, and I know it's going to happen very soon because of my life's journey. And also I know that because of the interactions I have with many races, many beings, not just ETs, but on this planet, in many other frequencies, on this world, especially the aquatic races, for example. which people seem to forget about. Oceans are full of civilizations. They're just in frequencies we don't access.
Right.
So there's a great many peoples that are going with the changes on the planet and are here for those changes. So the preparations are in place for many races. So it's going to happen over a short period of time. I still see that that crust has to go, has to transmute. And because we're going to be living in that light. Now, when we're in that light, the reality will appear somewhat similar to this, but have a totally different feel to it. And the ecosystem and everything we'll be living will be not living off light, will be light. Right. So you don't even consume light in order to live, is what we previously did in the higher realms. This time we're going to be the light.
Okay. So what about all of those that don't even have a clue that any of this is going on? I mean, will a split reality develop to where those that are clueless will continue on in a 3D level and the Earth will actually be in an ascended version as well as a lower frequency version? Will there be more than one frequency of Earth, do you think?
I'm probably one of the very few that don't see the split thing going on. I see the split thing going on where people have to go off-world to another planetary reality to continue the drama. Mm-hmm. Because if I look at it from this way, and the communications I have with our Earth Mother, my own personal relationship with her, which we've all got this, is that if I'm going to ascend, am I going to leave an aspect of me behind in this space-time domain? No. So if Mother Earth is to ascend, is she going to leave a part of her behind? I keep getting no. I keep getting that she's going to become a being of light. So there's not going to be an Earth Mother left behind. What there will be, though, is timeline tangents going off into other timelines, if that helps. But in this timeline, in this cosmic arena, in this timeline, now this is where it gets really tricky, to understand timelines and how they function. When a reality first gets created, it doesn't get created into multiple realities instantly. The space-time location is chosen in the appropriate place within the cosmic arena. So Earth was first manifested in this timeline. When a whole lot of races with their technology, their timeline surfing technology, came to this reality, that's when they started creating tangents of other timelines. But they always come back to this one, because this is the organic one. This is the real one. This is the... when you talk to people that go off onto these other realities and do other timelines, they always loop back to this timeline. It's a loop. It always comes back. So this one is the organic one, and this is the one that's going to evolve. And when it does, those other timelines will end up looping back, but they always have to loop back prior to this ascension process taking place. Mm. They can't loop back forward in time. Mm.
Okay. Could you think of them as like probabilities?
They are exploring another potential version of life, yes.
Okay.
But the energy, what I want to say is the substance behind the manifestation of those realities is not like this one. They're more shallow. They don't have the, for want of a better term, the meat, the substance, like this organic timeline does. That's why they always come back to this one. And there's a whole myriad of ET races that have come back to this timeline right now because they keep saying, this is where the disaster happened. This is where things went wrong. At this point in time, well, it went wrong for them because they're still in the world of technology and they still want to manipulate things and control things, so of course it went bad for them. But for all the beings that ascend and going to become a being of light, then it's a wonderful thing.
Sounds like this moment right here is like the finals in Earth history, and you can't skip out, you know. Even though you cut class, you got to come back for the finals, and that's the true test of your experiences here.
Yeah, that's what happens. See, these timelines that branch off and then they loop back, they eventually realize that they're going to have an incarnational experience anyway. So otherwise, I can't go through. This is like, this planet is the Stargate into universal consciousness, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm.
I did, after your material and you came here, I was listening on an interview, and I did hear from Santos Bonacci. He talks about astral theology, I believe, and he actually mentioned the science of a planet becoming a star, and he mentioned that the Earth is actually, I forgot what it was, I think it was spinning faster but slowing down, and that it's moving away from the sun, gaining its own gravitational pull and momentum, and he actually mentioned also that it will become a star eventually. So that was really interesting.
Yeah, there's a few people that are really starting to see it. Because the information is pointing to it, but because of people's current constructs and belief systems, they can't put two and two together and see that that's actually what's taking place. So it takes some people a while to get around to it. But Santo's putting out some really good info. We don't agree 100%. No one does. I mean, he doesn't agree with everything I say. I don't agree with, all the speakers out there. They don't all agree with me. That's reality. But I really like what he's putting out. It's fantastic, Good on him. Yeah. He's really doing some hard hitting out there, and he's really telling it how it is, and I really admire him for that.
He is putting out a lot of work, yeah.
Have you had the chance to run across him? He lives over kind of near you, doesn't he?
Yeah, we've had the odd conversation, just private Skype conversations ourselves. So we're looking at making something happen together. You might have me on one of his programs, I think, interview him soon.
Oh,
so it'd be fun.
Yeah, it'd be a really nice combo.
It is. We have a good laugh. It's for want of a better term, it's an Australian thing. We call ourselves the Wobble Boys, just for a bit of fun, a bit of it's a Wobble Boy thing, you could say. Yeah, it's a bit of fun. I don't know if you know what that means.
It cut out.
What was it? What was the term that you said?
Oh, the Australian term. Call ourselves the Wog Boys because it's a pun. You see, that in the 60s, 70s and 80s, there was a lot of racism in Australia towards ethnic peoples. And, I was called, they called us Wogs. They still do at times, but it's sort of eased off. And it actually represents Western, it's short for Western Oriental Gentlemen. And but they refer to Greeks and Italians and Middle Eastern people as Wogs. And they were very racist. And I used to get spat on the bus on the way to school. People used to spit on me and call me a dirty, filthy, stinking Wog. And, and all that sort of stuff. So I was on the receiving end of some pretty bad racism in the 70s in Australia, unfortunately. It was just a white supremacist thing.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right, so we're talking about, certainly that sort of thing comes from a level of misunderstanding.
Yeah.
And we were talking about, at the kind of the beginning of this interview, extending understanding to others and allowance to others on their path and also speaking our truth in the face of being misunderstood. And for many who are, stepping into their power and becoming more and more comfortable with speaking their truth, one of the challenges doing that can be people misunderstanding you. So, can you share your perspective on that around us dealing with overcoming that challenge of actually being misunderstood and the fear that we might have of being misunderstood?
Yeah, I actually pretty much have gotten over the fear of being misunderstood. It comes down to attachments and letting go of our attachment to wanting people to understand us. They don't have to. It's okay. You know what I mean? So I would like them to. My ego, George, would actually very much like them to understand. But they don't have to. Ultimately, the greater me will just say it's okay wherever they're at. But, you get to this point where you understand why they don't get you, why they misunderstand you, because, again, it's their belief system. Again, it's their program. I've still got programs that I'm working through. Everyone's got them. If you didn't have them, you'd be shining a great light. That's the reality. If you didn't have any attachments and entities attached, you'd be shining a great light. It's just the way it is. Anyway, getting past the fear of other people having to understand you, I get taken out of context a lot because basically when I'm explaining things, I do the hard hitting and I expose, you know, the levels of deception. And people who tend to be caught up in the conspiratorial drama of things pretty much react to that vibration. And there's also the love and light crowd, is what we call them, because don't forget I'm love and light in here, okay? But there's the other love and light crowd, not trying to create, you know, separation here, but they're into that other version of light, which is all about blissing out. It's basically drug taking. You bliss out on that light. It turns you into a passive zombie, and you end up giving your power away to all these other entities. So that's the issue with that light. And they say to me, because I expose a lot of the deception, that I'm all dark, I'm all evil, and I'm all about deceiving people, that I'm the great deceiver, that I'm fraud, and you know, I get all that, you know. I'm actually an agent of Satan, and it's gone as far as I'm the son of Satan, and it's gone as far as I am Satan.
I can just see somebody chopping up this that sound bite. And look, he admits it.
Yeah, see, they'll just take it, I am Satan, you know, and I'll take that out. But I tell you what, if I'm having a conversation with the priestly caste, and I'm sitting there with the Pope or an ambassador or a representative of that regime, of that empire, of that organization, of that institution, of that corporate fascist organization, then they better call me Satan, because that is exactly what I am to their God, because I am their God's opposer. I am in opposition to their God, and I am an adversary to their God. So they'll nail it right there and then. If you want to call me that word in its true meaning, in the true sense of the word, that's exactly what I am.
I must say, when you were here during the conference, during the workshop, we had, must have been close to 300 people, and I was really impressed that on and off stage you were genuine, you were very human, very approachable, and you just kept giving and giving, and I was really just impressed, because I know it takes a lot of energy during those workshops, and you gave tirelessly, and it was very humbling to see that.
So I don't get to see these folks often, and it was just so wonderful to be there. I mean, the way we felt at the Assetti Ranch with the Assetti family, that's how I like to call you guys, is the Assetti family. We were so welcomed, it was so warm and loving, and the 200 people that were there, it's kind of like a mini Woodstock, if you ask me. It's just, you know, it was just beautiful. We absolutely loved our time there, and it was a joy and an honour and a pleasure, because, you know, we've always got something to learn, and listening to the people and explaining their lives and, you know, their pain and the experiences, it's just incredible. We are such a race that, such a unique race in this cosmos. It's just amazing who and what we are and what we can cope with, what we deal with. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Great, because we're already planning your next visit here to the ranch, so we'll keep in touch.
Okay. That's fantastic. I've got to write my book first, so we're hoping to have that out in March. How about that?
Yeah. Do you have a title for that book already?
Yeah, I do. But I'm not going to say it because I haven't registered it yet.
Oh, okay. All right.
Is there a rough due date of when people could expect that it might be coming out?
We're hoping to get it out around March. That is, at the moment, what we're aiming for. So I can't say it's definitely going to be on that date because I'm still writing. So every day I'm writing, yeah. It's a fantastic process. I've never written a book, and I'm not someone who reads books. So it's a bit of a challenge because you've got to take the biggest concepts of life. Hey, George, what's the answer to life? Well, and you've got to put them in a way. See, I'm trying to strip it all away so I express it in the most simplistic way that anyone can understand it. And I'm doing it in a way that I'm not defending a belief system. It's just, that's the universe, that's what I saw, this is what's going on, here it is. It's up to you to make your own mind up after that, you know? See how it feels for you. And that's pretty much the gist of the book. But I am calling a spade a spade. Okay, you can call it whatever you like, but from the, you know, the meaning of that little cliche, it's, if it is a cliche, calling something for just how it is. I mean, I'm going to kick butt when it comes to God, the church, and you just got to be honest. You got to be real, because that is just nothing but evil, what's going on there. And I say that from personal experience, because I went back to the moment I was christened and I saw what was going on in that building at that time. And it had nothing to do with love, and it had nothing to do with God as I know it. And it was everything to do with draconians, winged serpents flying around, and my parents selling my soul to the entity that runs what we call a church. So it's people don't, why babies cry. I was bawling my eyes out because I couldn't speak physically, but I was bawling my eyes out because of what I was seeing and what I was experiencing. And church is not what you think. If you could walk into a church and remove the veil and see behind that reality and see it for what it truly is, you would freak out.
Sounds like a parasitic environment, or vampiric almost.
Oh, that's what it's all about. Of course it is. That's exactly what it's about.
Right.
Yeah. It's right in that moment you are making an agreement. It's all about laws, contracts, agreements, and that's where Santo is good too. And that's where, you know, things like holographic kinetics is just brilliant. I've just done a course, because I don't do courses, as you know. But Cynthia and I, we just did a course called Holographic Kinetics. It's here in Australia. It's run by a gentleman of Aboriginal descent, and he's been entrusted by the Aboriginal elders, this technique called Holographic Kinetics, and it is one of the most powerful tools you'll ever utilize, because you literally traverse timelines. So we were going back in time and experiencing things in our lifetimes and in other lifetimes, and not only on this planetary reality, but other realities as well. So you can go back through your genetic line and you can experience your ancestors. It was so powerful. So it's not a spiritual healing modality. It is literally a technique. And for want of a better term, you are literally casting out demons, because when you're... I'll give you an example. My great-great-grandfather was involved in what's called the Brotherhood of the Snake, and he was having, he was in the middle of a ritual, and I went back to that moment because I had to address an issue in this life, which came down through my genetic line on my father's side. So when you go back to the moment that it was created, it was him partaking in that ritual, which in that moment he gave his soul away, and a draconian entity attached. Well, you know, so we called up my great-grandfather's spirit in my body, and he spoke through me. So I felt him, I felt his emotions at the time. I was back there living the scenario, in the room, in the ritual. It is so powerful. And then what we had to do was to bring that draconian to the surface in me, and it spoke through me, and we had to remove it from my genetic lineage, my genetic line. It was so powerful. It was incredible. And once you go through this process, you feel so free, because you don't have that burden of that, because they have what's called born rights. Okay, when these agreements are made through these ritualistic processes, they then have what's called born rights. See, they have created the systems. Every time someone does communion, they're agreeing to a contract. It's a ritual contract. And an agreement. So you've got to be so careful with things that you partake in, you choose to partake in, because agreements and contracts are being made left, right, and center with people, and they're just giving their souls away, and they don't even realize it.
Absolutely. It seems like you need to be so careful of being full and complete within yourself and not deriving joy, needing what you call acknowledgement outside of yourself, love. Loving yourself completely and wholly first before looking for that outside of oneself. And anything outside of oneself, it seems like it's just setting you up for disaster down your genetic line, actually.
Yeah, it comes either through the genetic line, or it comes back through your spirit's journey in not only this reality, but, you know, in the cosmic arena. in the universe. So it depends how far back you've got to go, because you might have set something up in, like we took one lady back to a lifetime in the Pleiades, where she was pack raped in the Pleiades. So we needed to remove that energetic, emotional energetic pattern from that lifetime in that star system. So we went back to that moment, back into that star system. She went there and relived it. Do you know what I'm trying to say? It's so incredible, so powerful. And that's why it's not well...
Holographic kinetic, you said?
Holographic kinetics.
Nice.
Yeah, it's not well known.
Wow.
It's only just been released. So, and you, not anybody can do this. I mean, you're dealing with the heavy dudes. Like, this is not for the faint-hearted. And I'll tell you what, it's... Yeah, thanks, darling. It's called Dreamtime Healing, using holographic kinetics. So the foundational basis of it is the ancient technique the Australian Aborigines used to use.
Wow.
So it's a shamanic type of thing, but, you know, you don't consume anything, and all you do is you work with a person's spirit and that person's higher self. That's it. You don't work with anything else. And you call in whatever needs to be called in, and you've got to know what you're doing, because... You know, there's a technique, a process to have to deal with, because these draconians and winged serpents, when they come to the surface, they're not very nice.
Oh.
Some of them go away quietly and understand that the contract needs to be broken, and you know, you've got to be removed out of this person's timeline, but other times they are really awful, awful. Like, they say awful things, they hiss, you see the person start to morph in front of you, and it's really quite serious stuff. It's not for the faint-hearted, but we've all got these things attached. If you've got a craving for chocolate, or if you've got a craving for cigarettes, or if you've got a craving for alcohol, or if you've got, you know, certain habits, each emotion. We're going into the rabbit hole now.
Addictions.
It'll freak people out.
Basically, addictions. Huh?
You've got to realize everything is consciousness. So coffee is a living collective entity. You know, we've got the collective human soul, right?
Mm-hmm.
You've got to realize that everything in the universe is alive. So coffee has a collective consciousness, and there are different groupings of consciousness within the collective consciousness of coffee. So you've got air, you've got certain coffee plants that aren't as nice as other coffee plants. So this is really understanding the natural environment and its construct as well. That's why this is a shamanic type of approach. And you've got to realize that everything that we do in life, you can start a thought form. You might just have a thought, a really, you know, unsavory thought, and then you have it over and over again. So what you've done now, that thought form now becomes a living entity, and that entity will now start stimulating now that thought as much as you can, so you can feed it, and it grows and grows and becomes a living being, just from a thought. So thought forms eventually become living entities. So you get an idea about something, and that becomes real. Your businesses, contracts, everything are living things. So it's understanding that everything in the universe is life, and approaching it from that perspective. Very, 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 very detailed. And you've got to be careful not to mess with this stuff, because you're dealing with timelines, you're dealing with the creative process of life, you're dealing with people's journeys, soul journeys, spirit journeys, and how it affects life around you. So it's a lot of responsibility involved with this technique. You know, there's people that have had illnesses and pains throughout their lives, crippled, doctors can't help them. They go and have a session, the entity gets removed that was creating that, and they never have it again. They just walk away free. This guy works in the prison systems with children, with prisoners that the medical system has let go of and has no hope. They call this guy in, and he has a 100% success rate. Once he removes that entity that was making that person be totally paranoid, schizophrenic, and murderous outrages, you know, like really brutal murders and things like that, they change like that, because that energy, that entity is no longer running them. It's gone.
Mm.
So he's in the prison systems. They can't utilize, they can't use him, because this is what basically the prison system in Australia said to him. Right? They said to him, we can't make yours official because you'll put all of us out of a job. So they just give him the odd hard case baskets on the side.
Mm.
That's it.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't want to be out of a job. So get the thinking there, eh?
Mm-hmm.
But let's not help all these people because I want to have a job.
Mm-hmm. I liked what you said about about them border patrols, them psychologists, and the reality border patrol.
Yeah, the border patrol guards of our realities.
Right.
You've got groups called skeptics, and you've got groups called psychologists and psychiatrists, you know, border patrol guards of our paradigm of reality. So every time somebody starts venturing beyond the boundaries of this reality, you know, you get sent to a psychiatrist or a psychologist or you know, if you want to argue that ETs exist or something, the skeptics will go, there, show us the proof. Mm-hmm. And you show them the proof, and then they'll go, that's not real. Where's the proof?
Yeah. No matter what you say, they won't believe you anyway, so.
They won't believe you.
Yeah.
It's like, it's the same group that used to argue that the world was flat.
Right, right.
Right? Yeah. Same organization, same infrastructure, and almost the people that were incarnated back then saying that are incarnated now saying, what UFOs? Where? We're all alone in this huge universe that's full of stars and billions and trillions of stars and planetary systems. No, we're all alone. Don't be silly. We're all alone.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just I wanted to elaborate a little bit more on speaking your truth. You were talking about not holding back when it comes to speaking out against, let's say, organized religion or things that are truly deception and lies. In a general way, but when we go within our families or out into the world where people don't share our views and they have strong views as well, I'm asking this question because I'm about to go home soon. They won't be watching this. I'd like to know how, you know, there's a balance there in how we express and connect, because we have to let them just be, and we need to be, but then sometimes we need to reach out and speak up. How do you deal with that in practical terms in your daily life with family or with friends without it becoming, you know, so uncomfortable it's hard to be around each other anymore?
Yeah, it's finding, I tend to take each situation on its merits, each person you talk to. You can't approach one person like you do another.
Yeah.
So you can't just be like a machine,
yeah,
you know, and just go blah with everybody. I've found, though, that I'm, when people are talking to me and they're sharing things with me and it's their belief system speaking, you just tell when a program is speaking. I can really tell when an entity is speaking or it's a program. I kind of tend to talk to them on a multidimensional level now. So I will listen to them as the person that I know, but then I'm going to be talking, if it's an entity, I'm talking to that entity on another level.
Okay.
And you watch the dynamics of the personality of the person changing while you're doing that, you know,
right,
in front of you. And especially if they're being condescending towards you.
Yeah.
You know, and every time they do that, you just call them for being scared of you. Call the entity. You just say to them, scared of me, huh?
Yeah.
Huh?
Okay. I like it.
Right? Especially if you've got family members or friends that have, or cousins or whatever, that have always given you a hard time. You just let them look at you, let them talk, and you go, you are so shit scared of me, aren't you? You know? And that's the entity that's talking through them to give you a hard time. And they are petrified of you, because any form of intimidation is an expression of fear.
Yeah, especially, you know, there's a lot more, you know, you go into a situation like that, it's a group of people, it's a family, and they're all coming at you with jokes and humor and some pretty intense, you know,
jabs.
Huh? Yeah, jabs. It's you know, it's a good challenge to hold your center and stay where you're
it's
at.
It's a very good challenge,
it's
you know, and it depends how you cope with it too, because sometimes you can go, oh, you know, why the need to express yourself like that?
Yeah,
you know, you can question them like that. So why did you feel the need to say it in that way?
Yeah.
Or why did you say that? Why did you feel the need to say that in the way that you just did?
Yeah. I've been trying to laugh along, you know, laugh along with it, kind of slip my stuff in there, but that's not working for me.
If it's not working for you, expose it.
Yeah.
So, and nicely. Also, nice. Why did you feel the need to expose to say that and in the way that you just did it? Why? Why were you so condescending? Why were you, you know,
just call it like
backhanded?
Yeah.
Well, and one thing that we've kind of become aware of and been practicing, I think, to varying degrees since the ranch has kind of been looking into the various aspects of contract law and trust law and stuff is, you know, is the adept use of questions.
Right.
Because often, you know, in any sort of commercial situation where people are trying to get a remedy, people are writing back and forth, or people are contracting, speaking right back and forth, and often it is done through questioning.
Mm-hmm.
And we've really seen, it's just amazing, like, how much can be revealed, and, you know, you can use that sword that George talks about.
Right.
With the words, but buffering in a way so that they reveal themselves, mm-hmm. basically, through
yeah.
the question. So
mm-hmm.
it's a really interesting art to start to practice on a regular basis.
Yeah.
Just playing with our communication abilities and our ability to ask questions.
You know, and I have been thinking about asking questions and contract, but never in regards to my family, because my programming is probably so deep there. So that's really helpful. Because I can,
yeah.
you know, you kind of get into a program with them where you almost start to revert back to, I don't know what, and it's hard to stay center and stay where you're at, you know. So sometimes maybe fresh perspectives or ways of interacting are harder for me to find when I'm in the midst of that, you know.
You know what really freaks them out is when you sit there and you look through them.
Mm.
Like they're carrying on like a pork chop. And you just look at them, and you just look at, and I mean, really look at them.
Yeah.
And then they get really uncomfortable.
Mm. I like that one as well.
I've done that with people that are close to me that have been giving me a hard time throughout my life, and it works really good. They don't know what to do. You watch them fidget and feel weird, and yeah, it freaks them out. Because right in that moment, you've got this real strong presence and this power about you. And the whole conversation that they're projecting towards you is to either put you down so they can see themselves as above you, because for some reason they're feeling threatened by your presence. So it's an innate need that they need to do is to, you know, project this conversation that persecutes you, ridicules you, condemns you in one, you know, some form, shape or another. And it's the whole thing is driven about insecurity and fear of your inner strength.
Age-old technique of the silence and stare, huh? The blank stare.
Yeah. That's yeah, because you can just look at them, and the look can be, why are you expressing yourself this way? What are you doing? You know? You can have it written all over your face. That you know, the question can be written all over your face by your look.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's
okay. And look, and ultimately, if you feel you need to make a stand, then that's what I recommend people to do rather than turn their back. Because, or there's times when you need to turn your back. Don't get me wrong. Turning the other cheek is there's a lot of wisdom in that. But if you feel that the moment has come in that relationship where you need to make a stand, make the stand. And you won't regret it in the long run, that's for sure. Because we're the way this reality is at the moment and where we're at with it all, and even if you upset these people, you could just say, look, you don't have to understand me in this moment. It's okay that you don't, but in the near future, you will. And the reason is having that place of knowing that the reality is going to change so much that they're going to be forced into their changes rather than listening to what we have to say and start considering a change within themselves through having a nice exchange of wisdom and conversation with us. That's the way we would rather it go.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm at peace with it now because I know that the reality is going to force them to change one way or another.
To ask you a question, since we're talking about tools and techniques,
you
said, you know, it's going to be a busy year. It already has been, and a lot of us who've had experiences, a lot of your audience, it's like we're getting really busy at night too. A lot's going on these other levels, and I know that that you've had some experiences you've had to acclimatize to as far as, like, coming back to your waking life or coming back to this reality? Not that it's lesser than, more than, but just adjusting. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sometimes it takes me a few hours. Sometimes it takes me half an hour. Sometimes it takes me 10 minutes or 5 minutes. Sometimes I've got the residue of that experience the night before with me the whole day. Mm-hmm. And I feel really drowsy and groggy or really heavy, or depends what I did, where I went and what I did. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if that helps. I feel that there's another question in there, though. I feel you've got another question.
I'm asking about tools and techniques as far as, coming back to waking life.
I mean, yeah, the tools and the techniques. One thing that I found is really wonderful is to, I like going for walks in the morning.
Yeah.
I find that really works well. What I'm doing now is I get up in the morning. Well, Cynthia and I are both doing it. We'll have a drink of water and go for a walk. And it just makes a massive difference in our lives. It grounds us. It puts us back in connection with nature. We get to contemplate the night before. And because we used to, a lot of the time just lie in bed and talk about it. We still do. But this time we tend to do it more while we're walking, which is great. Sometimes you really need to hold on to it and talk about it straight away, the moment you come back from an experience. Mm-hmm. Because this reality is a bit like a thick pea soup and it wants to take it away from you. So you might need to talk about it in the moment you're up. But, yeah, we find that the walking in the morning is very balancing, very grounding, and I feel a lot more balanced throughout the day because of it. Another technique is just to go and pull some weeds in the garden. That's very grounding as well, getting your hands into the ground. It's hard now because you've got ice and snow out there. I understand that. But that's a technique you can use.
It's so simple. Well, I mean, walking is one of the many techniques of all the great philosophers, too. I mean, and wanderlust itself, you know. So, cool.
Yeah, I find when I walk, I'm really enjoying it, and it can become really a meditative process. That insight about the child of God and what it means to be a child of God came to me last week during a walk, and that's what, you look at it. I also got the knowing of what we call Jesus Christ. If you look at it from Yeshua Christos, right? Mm-hmm. And look at the word Yeshua, and what does it mean in today? Yes, you are Christ.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yeah. So, and I'm not coming at it from a religious perspective. I'm just coming at it from the point of view of who and what he was and what he was trying to say. So, yeah.
Well, we're running kind of low on time to the end of this here. Looks like we got a little bit more, maybe 5 minutes. To make sure that we put this in there, in case people don't already know who George is, I imagine most people do, but George, where do people go to check out your website or any of your info?
Well, they can go to my website, which is called our-journey-home.com. Or in other words, our-journey-home.com. And that's pretty much the website. The old website we're kind of phasing out at the moment. And I'm in the process of writing a book, so that will be out and around from March onwards. Don't know the exact time frame. And I'm really excited about it. There's a lot of juicy stuff in there. It's pretty much not being... I'm not writing it to target the people that already know my message. There will be some new bits and pieces in there, but there will be, and it's not my message, I'm just sharing universal knowledge. So no one owns it, I don't own it, nobody owns it. It's inside each and every one of us. Mm-hmm. I'm just writing a book that's going to help provide triggers for people to try and reconnect with that aspect of themselves and reconnect with the greater knowledge of life. So I'm really excited about it because I'm writing in a way that's going to target more of a generalized audience rather than the ones who are, you know, because I've got people that say that, there's New Age festivals and that, and some people want me to go and speak there. Then the organisers look at my material and they go, uh-uh. So even for so-called spiritual groups, I'm just so out there and they, I'm exposing so much, so they don't like it. I mean, it's fun. I mean, we really need to be authentic. Mm. See, the book I'm writing is, it's not about popularity. It's the information I share is not popularity. It's not a popularity context. It's about integrity. The information I share hurts. It hurts our mind. It hurts our belief system. But at the same time, it frees and liberates us because you get to be your authentic self. You know, that's why I'm wearing this. Just be. You got to be you. You don't have to be anyone else, anything else. You don't have to follow any groups. You don't have to give yourself to a guru. You just don't have to. These are all stepping stones. If you want to follow that path, go for it, but don't make it your everything. If you want to make it your everything, you just gone and created a religion. Good on you. You know? And it's true. The moment, you know, like I just did a course called Holographic Kinetics, Dreamtime Healing. I'm not going to make it my everything. Mm-hmm. It's a massive tool to have in the toolbox. Think of it like the sledgehammer, I suppose. It's a big one. But I'm not going to make it my everything. My eternal is my everything, my internal, my eternal. And that's really the core of my message. If people really listen to what I'm saying, if they can get past their belief systems, the core of the message is stripping away all the BS, all the layers of deception and lies, and getting to the core authentic self that is within each and every one of us. And when you get to that, that's when you start really expanding your awareness and seeing through everything and reconnecting with life in its true capacity. Do you mind if I read something out?
Not at all. Sure. Please.
Because it'll really help with just talk while I look for this, because I'm trying to remember where I've got it in the book and what page.
Okay. While we got this opportunity, then let's also mention the DVD. Maybe Sun could tell us about that.
The DVD is available now.
Of the George presentation from the ranch.
Right.
People don't know what
that was
about.
During this summer, and it's on the website.
www.isari.org. It's $49. It's over 10 hours of workshop, and it's awesome.
Definitely one of the most powerful experiences I've had here at the ranch, and definitely set things in motion that I'm still trying to.
Yeah.
It's just been so intense ever since that event.
And,
so.
And you know, it's been a really interesting season, and the ranch is kind of known for having dynamic, cutting edge information being presented here, but. Mm-hmm. I'd have to say I haven't experienced an event that really shook people to their core. Yes.
Absolutely.
Like that event did.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I did Reiki 1 and 2. I'm just going to throw another curly one in there.
Okay.
I did Reiki 1 and 2, and I followed what was behind the Reiki symbols. And because I needed to sort out what was going on with that, and I followed that energetic stream in holographic kinetics, and what was revealed was the winged serpent.
With the classic four symbols.
It's the energy that's behind the symbols. They're the ones that created the symbols to indoctrinate people into their light spectrum that they've created. Now, I've done Reiki 1 and 2, and that's quite disturbing for a lot of people. Look, it will always have a payoff. It's got to do some good, otherwise people won't go for it. But what's the trade-off? So that's pretty much what I want to share there. I know it's a tough one. It's a tough gig. Look, I'm even talking about the rainbow body in my book. What's the rainbow body? It's pretty. It's got lots of pretty colours. I have one. But am I going to make it my everything? If you look at it like this, when you look back through ancient scriptures, if you know the actual path of humanity in this planet, you realize that the planet has been on a path of descent for a very long time, hundreds of thousands of years. It's been a path of descent. Okay? Now, the rainbow body and that information came out on a band of frequency about there, not that long ago. And if we're right down here now, okay? So you come down through epochs and eras, hundreds of thousands of years, 50,000 years, and then, boom, on this band of about 6,000 years ago, maybe there was talk of it in Atlantis, okay, so about here. That frequency spectrum is the main talk of the rainbow body going, it started around 6,000 years ago, maybe 7,000 years ago. Now, as we're going through those levels, that frequency spectrum is where the rainbow body is applicable. So we've descended below that, below, not in really in the sense of below, because I'll get to the other below bit in a minute. We've gone into compression. So we haven't gone really below that in the sense of people thinking that we're gone deeper into darkness. It's more into compression. And so we look at the rainbow body as above us in frequency. And from one perspective it is, but ultimately it isn't. And so what I'm trying to say to you is there are some things that need to be sold with really good advertising campaigns. They need to be up in lights. There's lots of pretty colours and things need to be sold. If you want to look at that rainbow body issue, and you will see it's in ancient scriptures. I remember having lifetimes. I remember doing the Kundalini thing, hitting the pineal gland, that version of enlightenment. I've done that before in my journeys. The issue is that version of enlightenment is 4D cosmic mind enlightenment, and it's not the ultimate, because the rainbow body exists, all bodies, like your earthly body exists in a frequency spectrum. Your Pleiadian bodies exist, like I've got a Pleiadian aspect incarnation, exists in that frequency spectrum. It's unique to that frequency spectrum, to that molecular vibration. The rainbow body is unique to its frequency spectrum. What I'm saying to people is don't make it your everything, because you will limit yourself into a paradigm. I'm here to go into my heart, into my eternal essence, which takes me beyond that. Okay, it takes me beyond the rainbow body. I'm turning inside out. Mm-hmm. That's different. So I just want to talk about that. We've had that discussion before. Yeah. Mm-hmm. A lot of people find this very challenging because we've been deprived. The whole agenda, the whole plan was to plunge this down into a very undesirable version of life. So they could then come along at the very end and sell their version of what's good in life. Mm-hmm. So we can then flock to it. We can then take to it. In fact, we yearn for it and we ache for it. That are the circumstances they wanted to create. So yes, the rainbow body is a wonderful thing relative to what we have here, but my recommendation is don't make it everything, because you exist well beyond that mm-hmm. Level of existence. Mm-hmm. So
definitely some interesting stuff for consideration.
Yeah, please consider what I've shared. Yeah.
George, it looks like that's about the time that we have allotted mm-hmm. for as far as the radio show stuff goes, so we should probably start off there.
Yep.
Maybe we'll just close this down and keep you on for just a minute, though, off air. And so I guess we'll just take this opportunity to thank George for doing the work that he does and for sharing his time.
Yes. Thank you, George.
Thank you. Thank you. I really appreciate that.
And man. And until next time. So, everybody out there, have a great evening, and looking forward to 2012. Let's make the best of this year.
Thank you. Thank you for this opportunity. I very much appreciate it. And it's a big year. It's a very big year coming up. It's already started. So happy New Year to everybody.